All right, so picture this. You're maybe at the dealership, we're about to finally get that new car you've been eyeing. Or maybe you're sitting down, pen in hand, ready to put an offer on a house. One of those big life moments.
Yeah, those exciting milestones.
Exactly. But there's this thing, this kind of invisible force, that plays a huge role in whether those moments actually happen the way you hope.
Oh, I know exactly what you're getting at.
Your credit report, it's like this record behind the scenes that can either open doors for you or slam them shut.
It really is. And it's not just about those big purchases. Your credit report can affect so many things. Your insurance rates, getting approved for an apartment, even some jobs.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what we're going to really dig into today. We're talking about the accuracy of credit reports.
Yeah.
Because, well, what happens when that record gets it wrong?
Right, because we're not just talking about a little typo here and there. We're talking about errors that can have a real ripple effect on your life.
For sure. And you shared this report with us from the National Consumer Law Center, Automated Injustice. It's a mouthful, I know.
Quite a title.
It is. But it really gets to the heart of the issue. It was published back in 2009, but the stuff it talks about still feels, unfortunately, super relevant today.
Oh, definitely. The technology might have changed a lot since then, but the core issues around credit reporting and how errors get fixed or don't get fixed haven't really gone away.
Right. And this report, it pulls together all these insights from congressional testimony and from experts who've been studying this stuff for years. So for this deep dive, our goal is to understand a few key things for you.
Lay it out for us.
First, we'll look at how common errors actually are on credit reports. Like, how often does this stuff really happen?
Because, you hear stories, but it's important to get a sense of the scale of the problem.
Totally. Then we'll dive into what the Fair Credit Reporting Act, that's the FCRA, actually says about how these errors are supposed to be fixed. What's the process, at least on paper?
The intended safeguards, so to speak.
Exactly. And then, this is the big one. We're going to look at how the system in the real world often doesn't live up to those ideals. Like, where does it fall short, and what are the consequences for consumers like you?
Because knowing how things should work is one thing, but understanding how they actually work is crucial for protecting yourself.
So by the end of this, we want you to come away feeling more informed, like you've got a better grasp of your rights and how to navigate this whole world of credit reporting.
It's about empowering you, the listener, to take control of your credit history.
All right, so let's jump right in. The report starts by talking about why accurate credit reports are so important in the first place. We all know it matters, but let's break it down.
Sure. So think of your credit report as this financial resume. It tells the story of how you've handled money in the past, how you've borrowed and repaid. And this story then gets translated into your credit score.
Okay, that three-digit number we all hear about.
Exactly. That score is what lenders use to assess your creditworthiness. Basically, how risky are you to lend to? A higher score means you appear less risky, a lower score, more risky.
And of course, the better your score, the better the deals you can get.
Exactly. Lower interest rates on loans, easier approval for mortgages, better credit card offers, it all ties back to that score.
And as you mentioned earlier, it's not just about loans. Landlords might check your credit report before renting to you. Insurance companies might use it to set your rates, and some employers even look at it during the hiring process.
It really underscores how much your credit history influences your financial well-being in both big and small ways.
So a good credit history opens doors.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, a negative one can create some serious roadblocks.
Absolutely. If your credit report is riddled with negative marks, whether they're accurate or not, it can really limit your options. You might get stuck with higher interest rates, be denied loans or credit cards altogether, have trouble finding an apartment, or even face higher insurance premiums.
Yeah, the impact can be huge. Now, the report really dives into how often errors actually pop up on credit reports, and the numbers are, frankly, kind of alarming.
Let's hear them.
So they found that the error rate for credit reports can range anywhere from a low of 3% all the way up to a whopping 25%. That's a pretty big spread.
It is a wide range, and it highlights the difficulty in getting a precise figure. But even at that low end, 3% of reports containing errors, that still translates to millions of Americans potentially being affected.
Millions.
Yeah.
And the report breaks down the types of errors they commonly see. One big one is mixed files, basically, when information from someone else's credit history gets jumbled up with yours.
Oh, yeah. Mismerged files, mixed identities, a real nightmare to untangle.
Another common one is just plain mistakes made by the companies reporting information to the credit bureaus. Like, imagine a debt that's wrongly attributed to you, Or maybe your payment history gets reported incorrectly.
Right. Things like payments marked as late when they were on time, balances reported inaccurately, closed accounts showing as open, those kinds of things.
And then, of course, there's the fallout from identity theft, which can really wreak havoc on your credit report.
Absolutely. Fraudulent accounts opened in your name, charges you never made those, can really drag down your score and make it hard to get credit when you actually need it.
The report brings in data from all sorts of other studies, too. There's this Zogby Interactive survey where they found that over a third of people who checked their reports found at least one error.
That's significant. It suggests that errors aren't just some rare occurrence. They're a real problem that lots of people are encountering.
And get this, half of those people who found errors said they had a really hard time getting them fixed. Then there are studies from USPIRG and Consumers Union, where they found serious errors in a quarter of the reports they analyzed.
A quarter? That's substantial. It really paints a picture of a system struggling with accuracy.
And even the Consumer Data Industry Association, which is the trade group for the credit bureaus, they acknowledge that a pretty big chunk of people who order their reports, almost 22%, end up filing a dispute.
So even by their own numbers, a significant portion of consumers are finding something they believe is wrong and are taking the steps to challenge it.
And then there was this FTC pilot study where over half the participants, over half, found errors on their reports. Now, this particular study might have actually underestimated the true error rate because it focused more on people with higher credit scores who you might think would be less likely to have issues.
That makes sense. If even people with generally good credit are finding errors at that rate, it really makes you wonder about the overall accuracy for everyone.
Now, the report points out that the credit reporting industry often tries to downplay the problem, claiming that less than 3% of reports have errors that actually lead to someone being denied credit. When you dig into how they get to that 3% figure.
Yeah, what's the fine print there?
It's a super narrow definition.
Yeah.
Basically, for an error to be counted in their calculation, you had to be denied credit, then you had to request your report, then you had to file a dispute, and then that dispute had to actually result in you getting approved for credit.
So all those other instances where an error might harm you, like if you get a higher interest rate because of a mistake on your report, but you still get the loan, those don't count.
Nope, not in their calculation. And it completely misses all the people who might see an error, but don't even bother to dispute it because the process seems too daunting or time-consuming.
Right. It creates a very limited picture of the true impact of credit report errors.
And the report emphasizes all these barriers that prevent consumers from even trying to dispute errors. Things like just not having enough time, not having the resources to navigate the process, not really understanding what their rights are, or maybe just feeling overwhelmed by the whole thing.
It's understandable. This stuff can be confusing and intimidating, especially if you're already dealing with financial stress.
Totally. They share this anecdote from the FTC study about a single mom with twins who just didn't have the bandwidth to deal with a credit report dispute on top of everything else she was juggling.
Life is complicated enough without having to fight tooth and nail to correct errors that shouldn't be there in the first place.
For sure. And even if we just take that lowest industry estimate of a 3% serious error rate, remember, there are over 200 million consumers with credit reports. That means, potentially, millions of Americans are dealing with damaging inaccuracies.
That's a huge number of people who could be facing unfair obstacles because of mistakes on their credit reports.
So let's get into some of the specific types of errors the report highlights as being pretty common. We talked a bit about mixed files, but let's unpack that a little more. What exactly are they and how do they happen?
So a mixed file, or sometimes it's called a mismerged file, is essentially when information that belongs to one consumer ends up in the credit report of a different consumer. And this often happens because of similarities in identifying information.
Like if two people have similar names or social security numbers.
Exactly. The credit bureau's computer systems, they're supposed to match up information and create these individual credit reports. But sometimes, if the matching criteria aren't strict enough, things can get crossed.
It sounds like a recipe for disaster.
It can be. And the report mentions that a huge percentage of the complaints the FTC gets about credit reporting, almost half of them, involve these mismerged files.
Half. That's a lot.
And often it's not even information from relatives getting mixed up. It can be complete strangers whose data ends up combined.
So how does this happen? Like, what are the systems doing that makes this so common?
Well, one issue is that the matching algorithms used by the credit bureaus don't always require an exact match on all identifying information. They might use what's called fuzzy matching.
Fuzzy matching.
Yeah, so even if, say, social security numbers are involved, if other pieces of information seem to line up, like a similar name or even a partial match on the SSN, the system might mistakenly combine those files.
So it doesn't take much for a mix-up to occur.
Not necessarily. The report even gives examples of files being merged when people shared only 7 out of 9 digits in their social security number, along with similar names.
That seems way too easy for an error to happen. And what are the consequences if your file gets mixed up with someone else's?
Well, think about it. Suddenly, you could have debts on your report that you never incurred. You might start getting calls from debt collectors or even face lawsuits for things that aren't even your responsibility.
Oh, man, that would be a nightmare.
It is. The report tells the story about a woman named Angela Williams, and her experience is really eye-opening.
Tell us about it.
So for 13 years, her Equifax credit report was messed up because her information was mixed with another woman who had a really similar name and an almost identical social security number, just one digit off.
One digit? That's crazy.
And because of this mix-up, her credit score tanked.
Right.
She kept getting denied for loans and credit cards, faced awkward situations in stores when her credit was declined, and the emotional toll, I can only imagine, was huge.
It's hard to grasp the level of frustration and helplessness she must have felt dealing with this for over a decade.
Absolutely. And you know what? After years of trying to get this fixed on her own, she actually had to sue Equifax.
She had to sue them.
Yeah, and it went on for years. Finally, a jury sided with her and awarded her a significant amount in damages. But the fact that it took a lawsuit and 13 years just to get her own credit report accurate is just mind-boggling.
It makes you wonder how many other people are out there quietly dealing with the consequences of nixed files without the resources or the know-how to fight a legal battle like that.
Right, because not everyone has the time, money, or legal expertise to take on a credit bureau in court.
So what can be done about this? The report suggests some pretty straightforward solutions, like the credit bureaus using much stricter criteria for matching information. They specifically say that requiring an exact match on social security numbers should be the standard.
That seems like common sense, especially with such a critical piece of identifying information.
Right. They even point out that having a system where if there's an 8 out of 9 SSN match, it gets flagged as a potential problem would be a huge improvement over what we have now. So the question is, why aren't they doing this already?
Well, the report offers a possible explanation, and it kind of comes down to money. The FTC has suggested that some lenders actually prefer to see all potentially negative information about a borrower, even if the match isn't perfect.
Because if there's even a slight chance that negative information might apply to you, they might be able to justify charging you a higher interest rate.
Exactly. It's all about risk-based pricing. So there might be a financial incentive for credit bureaus to err on the side of including more information, even if it means more errors.
And the report highlights that the credit bureaus have actually known about this mixed file problem for decades. The FTC even reached agreements with them back in the 90s, requiring them to improve their procedures. Yet here we are all these years later, and it's still a major issue.
It really goes to show that sometimes, even when there's awareness of a problem and even regulatory action, real change can be slow, especially if it impacts profits.
Okay, let's move on to another big source of inaccuracies, identity theft. This is a problem that's been growing rapidly, and the report talks about how it can really mess up your credit report.
It can be devastating. When someone steals your personal information and uses it to open accounts or take on debt in your name, all that fraudulent activity shows up on your credit report.
And it's like a double whammy. Not only are you dealing with the stress and hassle of trying to undo the damage the identity thief has caused, but now your credit history is also taking a hit, through absolutely no fault of your own.
Right. You might start getting denied for loans, see your credit score plummet, and face all sorts of other financial consequences because of someone else's criminal actions.
And frustratingly, the report points out how the credit bureau's matching procedures, the same ones that cause problems with mixed files, can actually make identity theft even worse.
How so?
Well, if a thief uses your first name and social security number, but maybe a different last name or address, the bureau's systems might still link that fraudulent activity to your credit file.
So it's like a combination of identity theft and a mixed file issue.
Exactly. The fraudulent debt gets reported, often after it's already gone into default, because obviously the thief isn't making payments. And then when debt collectors start trying to track down the debtor, that negative information can easily end up on your report, even if some of the key details don't match perfectly.
It highlights how vulnerable the system can be to these kinds of exploits.
They share this really disheartening story in the report about a couple, the Litchfields, who spent six years battling with the credit bureaus to get rid of debts that were racked up by someone with a similar name who lived in another state.
Oh, wow. That's a long time to be fighting for something that wasn't even their fault.
I know.
Yeah.
And get this, they even had a copy of a credit card agreement that clearly had the other person's signature on it, but it had their social security number.
So they had clear proof that this debt wasn't theirs, but the credit bureaus were still giving them the runaround.
Yep. And during those 6 years, they faced all these consequences. They got turned down for a student loan for their daughter, their credit card interest rates went up, they had to pay more for a home equity loan, all because of someone else's fraudulent activity.
That's just not right. It really highlights how these errors can have a ripple effect on so many aspects of your life.
And it gets worse. It actually took the intervention of the Boston Globe newspaper for TransUnion to finally agree to work with them and fix the issue.
A major news outlet had to get involved. That's pretty telling.
It really is. And it makes you wonder, what happens to all the other people who are victims of identity theft but don't have a big newspaper on their side? How many people are just stuck dealing with these errors and the consequences with no way to get them resolved?
It's a sobering thought. It really underscores the need for a system that's more responsive to consumers and more effective at addressing these kinds of problems.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit and talk about errors that come directly from the companies that provide information to the credit bureaus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the creditors, the lenders, the debt collectors. The report calls them furnishers.
Right, the sources of the data that ends up on your credit report.
Exactly. And they break these errors down into a couple of main categories. The first one involves inaccurate reporting about your account history, things like your payment status, the balance you owe, whether an account is open or closed.
So basically details about how you've managed your accounts.
Right. And these inaccuracies can happen for a variety of reasons. Maybe a payment gets applied to the wrong account, or there's a simple data entry error, or maybe the company isn't following the standardized reporting formats they're supposed to use.
Those reporting standards are there to try and ensure consistency and accuracy. But if a company isn't adhering to them, it can definitely lead to problems down the line.
The report gives this really frustrating example of a man named George Symes, who had a medical debt that went to collections. He paid off the debt, but the debt collector's automated system kept reporting it as unpaid to TransUnion.
Oh man, that's the kind of situation that can really make you feel powerless. You did the right thing, you paid the debt, but the system is still working against you.
And it gets worse. Mr. Symes actually sent proof of payment directly to TransUnion, but they didn't even forward those documents to the debt collector.
So the proof was right there, but it just got lost in the bureaucratic maze.
Basically.
Yeah.
And because of this, he spent three and a half years trying to get this error corrected. And it only got resolved after he filed the lawsuit.
It's a perfect illustration of how automated systems, while they can be efficient, can also fail consumers when there's no human oversight or intervention to catch these kinds of errors.
Totally. The second major type of error from furnishers is when they attribute accounts to the wrong person. The report calls these ownership disputes.
Ah, so you're saying this is when an account shows up on your report, but you're saying, hey, this isn't mine. I never opened this account.
Exactly. And the report mentions that this actually happens quite a bit based on how often a particular dispute code, consumer states account, is not Hischer's, is used when people file disputes.
And so it's not just a rare occurrence. It seems to be a fairly widespread issue.
They tell the story of a man named Charles King, whose ex-girlfriend opened credit card accounts in his name without his permission. And when he disputed these fraudulent accounts, the company that bought the debt, Asset Acceptance, did what the report calls a really superficial investigation.
Just superficial meaning?
Meaning they basically just compared the information he was disputing to their own records, which might have already been inaccurate, without even bothering to request the original documents from the credit card company. Those original documents would have shown that the signatures didn't match.
So they didn't even do the basic due diligence of checking the original paperwork.
It doesn't seem like it. And this seems to be a common problem with companies that buy up old debts. They often buy them in bulk and don't necessarily have access to all the original documentation. So their investigation often boils down to just checking their own potentially flawed records rather than getting the primary source documents.
Which, of course, puts the consumer at a significant disadvantage.
Totally. It feels like the system is set up to just accept whatever the companies reporting the information say, even when it's clearly wrong and harming the consumer.
Right. And this kind of gets to the heart of the issue with the dispute process itself, which we'll talk about more in a bit. But first, there's this other really shady practice we need to discuss, re-aging of debts.
Re-aging. What's that all about?
So the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the FCRA, puts limits on how long most negative information can stay on your credit report. Generally, it's 7 years. After that, it's supposed to fall off.
Okay, that makes sense. You shouldn't be hung up by financial mistakes forever.
Exactly. But re-aging is when debt collectors try to cheat the system. They essentially misrepresent the date when a debt became delinquent.
So they're basically lying about when the debt went bad.
Essentially. They might change the date to make it seem like the debt is more recent than it actually is, so they can try and keep it on your credit report for longer than those 7 years.
But why would they do that?
Money, of course. The report points to the rise of the distressed debt industry. These companies buy up old debts, often for pennies on the dollar, hoping to collect on them.
So by making a debt seem newer, they might have a better chance of getting someone to pay.
Exactly. And the FTC has actually taken action against companies for doing this, like Performance Capital Management. But the report argues that the credit bureaus aren't doing enough to prevent this practice.
So it's like a loophole that's being exploited.
The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals even raised concerns about Equifax's system for handling what they call the date of last activity. They basically said that the way Equifax is managing this information could allow for delinquent accounts to stay on credit reports even longer than the FCRA permits.
Another example of how this system, unintentionally or not, can end up working against the consumer.
Unfortunately, yes. And the report shares this story about a man named Steven Rosenberg who was being pursued for a debt from the 1970s.
The 70s, that's ancient history.
Right. But this debt buyer, Cavalry Investments, they reported it to the credit bureaus with a false opening date of 2001. And this ended up causing problems for Mr. Rosenberg when he tried to refinance his mortgage. And guess what? Initially, Equifax just took Cavalry's word for it.
They didn't even bother to verify the information.
It seems not. It really shows how vulnerable consumers can be to these inaccurate reporting practices, even when the debts in question are super old and might not even be legally collectible anymore.
Okay, so we've seen how common errors are and some of the different ways they can sneak onto your credit report. Now, let's talk about the thing that's supposed to help you fix these mistakes, the dispute process under the FCRA. But the report is pretty scathing in its assessment of how this process actually works, calling it fundamentally broken.
Broken seems like a strong word. What are the specific issues they're highlighting?
Well, remember, the FCRA is supposed to ensure that credit reporting is fair and accurate. And one of the key ways it aims to do that is by giving consumers the right to dispute inaccurate information.
The right to challenge what's being reported about you.
Exactly. And the report quotes Senator Proxmire, who is involved in creating the FCRA, talking about how important it is for consumers to have this right, to be able to tell their side of the story and have inaccurate information removed from their reports. It was seen as this essential protection.
It makes sense. Your credit history has such a big impact on your life, so you should have a way to make sure it's accurate.
Absolutely. But the report argues that the current system, the way disputes are actually handled, has become a far cry from that ideal.
So where does it go wrong?
The biggest problem is that it's become this highly automated process that often fails to capture the nuances and complexities of individual disputes.
What do you mean by automated?
Well, when you send in a dispute letter explaining the error and providing your supporting documents, often all that detailed information gets reduced to these very short, generic codes. And the actual documents you send, the proof you've gathered, often don't even get sent to the companies that reported the information in the first place.
Wait, so all that effort you put into writing a detailed explanation and gathering your evidence, it just gets boiled down to a code?
Essentially. And the people working at the credit bureaus who are handling these disputes, they often have a very limited role. Their main job is just to select those codes, with little to no actual investigation or judgment involved.
So there's not really a human being carefully reviewing your situation and making a determination about whether the information is accurate or not.
It doesn't seem like it. And the report has this section titled, "You Call This an Investigation," where they describe what a real investigation should look like, reviewing documents, researching facts, talking to people involved. They even contrast it with this example of a fraud investigator at a jewelry store who goes to great lengths to get to the bottom of things.
That's the kind of thoroughness you'd expect when someone's claiming they've been wrong or there's been a mistake. But that's not what's happening with credit report disputes.
Apparently not. Instead, we have this system called eOSCR.
eOSCR.
It stands for Online Solution for Complete and Accurate Reporting. It's basically the electronic system the credit bureaus use to manage disputes. And the form they use is called an Automated Consumer Dispute Verification, or ACDV.
Lots of acronyms to keep track of.
I know, it gets confusing. But the report says that the vast majority of disputes are actually processed through this eOSCR system.
So this is the main avenue for consumers to try and get errors corrected.
Yep. And the ACDV form, it's incredibly limited. It just contains some basic identifying information, those one or two short dispute codes, and maybe a very brief description of the problem.
That doesn't seem like nearly enough space to properly explain a complex dispute.
Exactly. And get this, the number of dispute codes they use is incredibly small, only 26 under eOSCR. And that's actually down from 100 codes they used to have.
26 codes to cover all the different kinds of errors that can occur. That seems way too limited.
Right. It forces all these different and unique problems into the same few generic categories. And the report points out that just a handful of those 26 codes are used for the majority of disputes.
So even if you have a very specific and nuanced issue, it's likely going to get lumped in with a bunch of other potentially very different problems.
Exactly. And here's the real kicker. The actual documents you send in to support your dispute, they often don't even get sent to the companies that reported the information.
Wait, so you're saying you can send in bank statements, letters, copies of checks, all the proof you've gathered, and the credit bureaus might not even forward that to the companies you're disputing?
That's what the report says. And the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, they actually describe this ACDV process as cryptic and meaningless.
I can see why. If the companies that reported the information aren't even getting the evidence you've provided, how can they possibly conduct a fair and thorough investigation?
They share this example of a woman named Rosemary Krajewski, whose car was repossessed after her son was arrested while driving it. Even though she and her ex-husband had never missed a payment, the repossession was reported to the credit bureaus.
So it wasn't even her fault that the car was seized.
Exactly. And when she disputed this with TransUnion, the ACDV that was sent to American Honda, the company that financed the car, just said something like, claims company will change, verify all account information. It didn't explain the real reason for the dispute, which was that the police had taken the car or asked about the payment history.
So it was this really vague and generic message that didn't capture the crucial details of her situation.
Right. And not surprisingly, American Honda just checked their records, which showed the repossession, and verified the information as accurate.
Because they didn't have all the context. They didn't know the full story.
Exactly. And this is a big problem with the whole ACDV system. Those codes and brief descriptions just don't adequately communicate the nuances of many disputes.
It's like trying to explain a complicated medical condition to a doctor using only a checklist of very general symptoms. You're not going to get the right diagnosis or treatment if the doctor doesn't have all the information.
The report then goes on to talk about the limited role of the actual people who work at the credit bureaus in this dispute process. They describe them as clerks and automatons.
Clerks and automatons. That's a pretty harsh way to put it.
I know, but it seems to be an accurate description based on internal documents and testimony from legal cases. It seems like their main job is just to select those dispute codes with very little actual investigation or critical thinking involved.
So they're not really using their judgment to assess the validity of disputes. They're just cogs in the machine.
That's the impression the report gives. They even quote from TransUnion's dispute processing manual, which basically outlines a series of steps that are all about data entry and code selection. There's no mention of reviewing the documents you send in or making any kind of determination about the accuracy of the information.
It sounds incredibly impersonal and bureaucratic.
Very much so. And testimony from a former TransUnion employee supports this. Her job was literally just to input the dispute into the system using the appropriate code. And once that was done, her involvement in that specific dispute ended. It was just automatically sent on to the creditor.
Wow, so there was no room for her to use her own knowledge or experience to say, hey, wait a minute, something doesn't seem right here. Maybe we need to look into this further.
It doesn't seem like it. And it gets even more concerning when you hear about how Equifax handles disputes. Their vice president described a process where they actually send scanned images of dispute letters to vendors in other countries who then read those letters and select the codes.
So not only is the process automated, but it's also outsourced.
Yep. And there's no phone, email, or fax contact with you, the consumer, or with the company that reported the information. And they don't even forward the actual documents you sent.
That's pretty alarming. It raises a lot of questions about quality control and whether those workers in other countries are really equipped to handle the nuances of U.S. credit reporting and consumer disputes.
Right. Are they familiar with the specific laws and regulations? Do they understand the different types of credit accounts and the complexities of the U.S. financial system?
It's hard to imagine how they could be as effective as someone who's working within the system and has a deeper understanding of how things work.
An experienced process, it doesn't sound a whole lot better. Their employees also primarily work with these multiple choice codes, even when they're dealing with lengthy dispute letters and lots of supporting documentation. There's no requirement or even a suggestion that they should actually look at the underlying documents or do any real investigation, like comparing signatures, if that's part of the dispute.
It seems like the focus is on speed and efficiency rather than accuracy and fairness. Get those disputes processed as quickly as possible. Move on to the next one.
And it gets even more automated when you file a